better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Go straight to the phone lines. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in on the Morning Rush. Danny, you're up first, man. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. A&M was coming off a victory at Auburn, and they've been playing well. When we first played them the start of the year, they weren't the team they are now. So they're what I consider the upper echelon of the SEC right now. And Vanderbilt goes to Alabama and wins. And they come home and beat South Carolina. So they're playing well. So it's not going to get any easier for us. But this is where we're at. And let's just make the best out of this year. Get on a run. Maybe go to NIT, make a good run there, and get ready for next year and get ready for spring football. And I was glad to see the baseball team get off the ground and start swinging the bats and playing good ball. And Ty, before I get off of here, now, you and Jethro Bodine are eating men, right? You're an eating man.
He may have to
generational gap.
Yeah, he don't know who. He
Danny, you're gonna have to. You're gonna have to tell me who Jethro
you
is.
You like to eat, Ty?
Yes,
right?
Sir.
You like food. You like pizza.
Love pizza.
You love pizza, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I will tell you that you can. I made a pizza with pork rinds and sour cream. And it had less than one carb per slice, and it's really good. So you can eat good and still eat what you want, because I love pizza, too. I just don't want all them carbs. But anyway, there's ways to get around that stuff, you know. You're young, but, boy, that stuff catching up with you there, the eating all them carbs. But anyway, guys, have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
Danny, I appreciate the call. Tommy, I've never
Jethro
heard of
Jethro Bodine that's lost on you? Beverly Hillbillies?
Crickets.
Black Gold, Texas Tea.
Sorry.
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jeb. No, nothing. All right.
I'm sorry. This is where my being a millennial and being ignorant catches up to me sometimes when we have...
It's not ignorance. It's just, I guess ignorance is a lack of knowledge. Anyway.
I think it's just, it's difficult. I'll
grant you this. That was an oldie when I was a kid.
Okay. Sour cream and pork rinds.
That's a new one on me.
I had a pie last night, now that Danny brings that up. So I'd say I eat pizza at least two or three times a week. And Arnes, I think Arnes is probably the biggest guy that continuously texts me, that's going to catch up with you. That's going to catch up with you.
I've been telling you.
So I rue the day when it actually does.
You got a few more years. Enjoy it while it lasts. But once you hit about 30, it's downhill.
Let's go to the next call. Bobby is in Hot Springs. Bobby, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wondered if you guys might be able to maybe share some insights of yours on, I know that we've got a couple of seniors leaving. I'd be pretty shocked if Mason Jones doesn't leave as well. Isaiah Joe. I'm interested in hearing what you guys think about with these four new guys coming in, what's left over, and then some of the grad transfers that are going to be eligible. What is this team going to look like next year? Are they going to look a little bit different? And are we going to have some positions that we can really count on? And then I'll hang up and listen.
Bobby, appreciate the call. We've been talking about this for a while now. This is probably the most fascinating conversation with the basketball team right now. It's not what's going to happen in the SEC tournament. It's not what's going to happen if they potentially do something in NIT. It's next year. Think about the four guys you got coming in. Jalen Williams, Fort Smith, Northside. Moses Moody, Monteverde Academy, formerly of North Little Rock, won a state championship there. K.K. Robinson out of Bryan at Oak Hill Academy now. And then Devontae Davis. Now,
Devontae Davis' team's playing for a state championship this weekend.
Jalen's team lost to Central.
Lost in the semifinal. We can talk about that game, but we talked last week about the shot clock.
Two and a half minutes.
This is where they came out and they stalled and held. hey, don't blame Central for that. That was
taking advantage of
that
rule.
Was the strategy. Well, it's not a rule. I mean, just that's the strategy they employed, and it worked for them. So, you know, one of the reasons why they're employing a shot clock for next year, but yeah, Jalen Williams and Northside eliminated in the semifinals
is to prohibit stuff like that. So
that'd take away from the quality of his player, who he could be at Arkansas next year, though.
Absolutely not. So, Bobby, I'm really excited about next year's team. So, I mentioned it earlier. Kyle Boone, who writes for CBS Sports, has Isaiah Joe at 18th going to the Oklahoma City Thunder in his mock draft. That doesn't mean he's going to end up in the first round or anything, but I think if he's a projected first-round guy, you got to go. You just got to go. Now, I don't know him personally. I don't know his family members. I don't know what they're thinking about the situation. It ultimately is going to come down to what he wants to do. But you also think about legacy is always a part of the conversation when it comes to, do you want to come back or not? Does Isaiah want to come back and really build on something? Does he want to build the start of the Eric Musselman era postseason-wise? Because this team is an NCAA tournament team based on the pieces returning and based on who they have coming in next year.
I know this. You didn't have one player taller than 6'8 this year. Next year, you'll have three. You have JD Note, Bebe.
JD's a guard. You're thinking of Connor Vanover.
I'm sorry.
Bebe.
Yep.
Iola,
Bebe, and you're right.
Jalen.
Mm-hmm. Vanover. Just kidding, my guys. Vanover, who's 7'3. Bebe, who's 6'9. Jalen Williams, who's 6'10.
6'10.
6'10. You got three guys right there. So,
hopefully still growing. So I think the download presence, Tommy.
And you got a couple of 6'8 guys. Ethan Henderson being one of them.
Reggie Chaney. I'm curious to see also. I think and I asked Clay. I was trying to get more out of Clay, and Clay's coming up in the program. He'll join us at 7. I wanted him to name who he thought was going to leave, and he kept pointing to whoever has the least amount of minutes. Well, based on that idea, based on that terminology, it's probably going to be Jalen Harris. Well. Reggie Chaney.
It would be minutes in relation to expectations. So,
correct.
I think Reggie Chaney, who went from one point starting, went from doghouse at LSU on the road early January to, you know, starting to not playing very many minutes. There is clearly some kind of disconnect or something going on. I don't know. It's behind the scenes. But if you told me Reggie Chaney was going to be entering the transfer portal in 2 to 3 weeks from now, I would not be surprised.
He had 3 minutes against the Aggies on Saturday. So, again, he has not been playing a lot of minutes. But it's a fascinating question to ask because a lot of it is going to be contingent on what Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones decide to do in terms of the outlook of your roster. Now, if they both come back based on the pieces you got coming in, it's going to be a really fun team to watch next year. If one of them comes back, it's still going to be a really fun team to watch next year. Now, if neither of them come back, the team's going to look a lot different. And you always, despite how good a kid may be in high school, you always have to temper your expectations of him at the next level, whether it's a Moses Moody, whether it's a KK, whether it's Devontae, whether it's Jalen. Guys, most of the time, can't just pick up where they left off in high school and automatically be as good as college. Now, these kids are fun to watch. If you haven't, you can't really now. Jalen's been exited. I don't know much about prep schools and their tournaments and how that goes. I know.
I'm sure they have them.
Yeah, I know Moses, his team, Monteverde Academy, went undefeated in the regular season they played in. I know Oak Hill was top 10.5 with KK.
Generally, a lot of prep schools, depending on where you're at around the country. Now, it's a little different if you're at the IMG Academy versus, you know, Link Prep or something that, you know, more regional. A lot of the more regional prep schools end up playing a lot of JV or JUCO teams and JV college teams. Some of the smaller schools have, and you end up playing a lot of those for your schedule. And then you also play each other, you know, as prep schools. So it's a little bit different, but you end up playing some college competition throughout the year because you generally play a lot of JUCO teams in particularly November and December.
So I asked you the question last week, Tommy, who would you rather have back between Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe? And you said Mason. So to kind of go off that question, who is more likely to come back? Is it Mason or is it Isaiah?
Well, I mean, based on what you're saying with the CBS Sports projections for the draft, I would have to say it's Mason Jones, right?
I would think if he's a projected first-round guy or if there's NBA scouts or people that said...
Because Isaiah Joe's higher.
Correct. Mason is a fringe, even second-round guy.
Here's the thing with Mason Jones to consider. He does have that year of prep school. Isn't he a year older than his class? I believe that's right.
Correct. Yeah, you talked about this last, because it's one more year of wear and tear on your body that you got
to
think
How
about.
Much does age start to play a factor if you're Mason Jones? I know he went to prep school, and then he's been to junior college, and now he's here. How many years from high school is he removed?
I don't even know how old he is, but the Hog Pod with him, I still haven't gotten a chance to listen to that yet. I'll probably listen to it when we're working out today, but you think about it.
He went to Triple Eight Academy, then to Connor State College.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's been here 2 years. Maybe that's just four. So he might be on track. He did not spend two years in JUCO. So
I would think that I don't think this team would be able to win a national championship next year, but I just at least the opportunity. He seems like a competitive guy. He seems like a fiery guy. And I know when the NBA calls, it's hard to turn it down. But would you rather be the man? Again, we don't know him personally. Would you rather be the absolute man on campus next year or be a G League or go overseas?
Because he's not a lock for the draft. Isaiah Joe probably is going to get drafted in one of the two rounds.
Correct. He would. I think most NBA panelists and experts who, in terms of that look at the draft, would say Isaiah Joe is a lock for that. But the question is, and I think Mason likes being, based on the few times I've seen him out, I think he likes being the man a little bit. He's not afraid to not necessarily show up. Yeah, I know. That's the point. So if I'm him, and again, I'm not in his shoes. I don't have these different scenarios laying out in my head because they're not firsthand experiences, but I'm taking the man on campus one more year. Even if Isaiah, and I know he loves playing with Isaiah Joe, and if Isaiah Joe decides to leave and he feels like that's better with him, that's fine. But then you're the absolute guy next year. There's no question that you're the most popular basketball player on campus. And I know that's not the same as being the starting quarterback like Felipe Franks will probably be. Like, if more people know Felipe Franks, but I mean, if the basketball team's going to do what we think they could possibly do next year, and Mason is the lead dog, he's the lead guy, I'm not giving that up to play in to try and do like G League or go overseas. I'm trying to be the big dog on campus next year.
For a lot of these guys, for most of these guys, the best lifestyle, treatment, travel, you know, nutrition, facilities, just keep going, will be what you have in college. You know, Tyler Wilson, when he was on the show, regularly talked about this. The facilities you have in the NFL are nowhere near what you have in college as far as weight room and training facilities and treatment.
And it's a lesser degree in the G League and whatever.
Right, and then you go to the NBA and it's
about the same
or less. And then you get to the G League and it's way less.
Yeah, so I think with the facilities you're talking about that Arkansas has with the brand new basketball performance center that's less than 5 years old, Bud Walton Arena, which is one of the best arenas in the country. And I can't get over the idea. And again, money talks. That's we talk about that all the time. Money is a big deal. But I don't know his family's background or anything in terms of their financial stuff. But I know Matt Jones went to Duke. His sister was a heck of a ball player as well. I can't get past the idea of you being the number one guy on campus with the basketball team next year. I can't get over that idea. And I think that would mean, again, I don't know Mason personally, so maybe I'm just projecting at this point, but I would think that would be a big deal.
I know this. How many siblings you got? A couple sisters, right?
I have one brother and three stepsisters, yes.
And you want to beat them at everything, right?
I do beat... Well, I say that I used to. Yes, Joey is...
You're a competitive type of guy.
Correct.
That
competitive SOB.
If your brother, Joey, you say, if Joey played, did he play high school basketball?
He did, yeah.
Was his team's better than yours? Is he older or younger?
He's younger. So there's even more of a...
So if his team's won conference titles and went to the state tournament more or won state titles and your teams didn't, he'd have that over you the rest of your life, right?
Correct, yeah.
You think it's any different for Mason Jones? He wants to have a career and a stamp on his career that's at least equal to his siblings.
His brother Matt, yeah.
Or even his sister, you know? Mm-hmm.
I thought that's
got to be an angle somewhere. I mean, all these guys are competitive, but you also have some, you know, and I'm not saying that's how you make the decision. He's coming back, so maybe he can win the national title and match his brother, you know. But trust me,
a lot would happen.
You got to live with that the rest of your life at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And you mentioned that. Have you seen the 30 for 30 with on Reggie Miller, the Spike Lee one? Is it Winning Time? I think it's Winning Time. So one of the first clips and first like point twos with Reggie is like, it was Cheryl Miller's obviously his sister, and he hated being called Cheryl's little brother, or I think he's the younger brother and stuff. That irked him a lot.
Yeah.
It's not just whether it's a sister or brother, but like you mentioned,
I'm not saying here's why he's coming back, but I'm just saying.
I mean, it's like you're saying, the littlest things could impact the decision, especially if he's torn. Now, I would have been, I actually just forgot because I wanted to ask him, hey, this could potentially be your final regular season game at Bud Walton Arena. What are your thoughts on that when he did what they did against LSU? And I'm curious, after this SEC tournament, and then after what happens in the NIT and stuff, where's his mindset at? Where's he thinking? What do you think? 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in if you want to get on this conversation. But me and Tommy disagree in the fact that he thinks it would be better for the team if Mason comes back. I think it would be better if Isaiah comes back. But
both would be better for the team.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
But let's be real clear about that.
But I think with the other question, that who's more likely to come back, and that's what we've been hitting on this morning.
Is your home in Arkansas at least 10 years old and served by OG&E? OG&E is offering a free weatherization program to increase your comfort and to lower your bills. Trained crews will perform an energy audit at no cost to you, and if your home qualifies, crews will install measures that could include attic insulation, LED light bulbs, weather stripping, power strips, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, and a whole lot more. And it's absolutely free to qualifying homes. Call OG&E today, 1-800-272-9741. That's 1-800-272-9741.
What are some other factors that's going to play into Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe's decision coming up? Is it how this season ends? Does that have any effect on what they decide to do? It was a scary moment, as you mentioned earlier, at the end of the first half when Isaiah went down, holding his knee.
You held your breath. He held his knee, and we all held our breath.
Because you just feel it for the kid. I don't know him personally. He just seems like a good kid. Seems, based on the way that he talks in press conference and stuff, he seems like a really good kid. And so what are some factors that are going to play into those two decisions coming up after the conclusion of their postseason?
I mean, you have to think about this. We just got a text from David in South Arkansas. Same thing I was going to say. They both have to weigh out the benefit the benefit of going professional is the money, right? But what's the benefit of another year at Arkansas? Is it more money a year from now? I mean, that's to me what you're weighing is, what would the benefit of another year at Arkansas do for you long term? For Isaiah Joe, he's got time on his side. He's got one less year than Mason. Just, it's a different, I think, factor when you're thinking through these things here.
I think also with the idea of the money and the being coached, it helps that you had a guy that has coached in the NBA, has coached in the G League, has coached in a number of different professional aspects, that it'd be different if you just had a college coach that was not necessarily getting you ready for the NBA. So Jared Stidham for Auburn, one of the things that NBA scouts and, NFL scouts and NFL GMs were said about him is Auburn hurt him more than he helped him, because that offense doesn't get you ready for the NFL. It is a college-only offense. Gus Malzahn, and even really their offense hasn't been the same since Nick Marshall was there, if you actually look and do a deep dive into the Tigers' offense. Eric Musselman gets you ready for the NBA. And I know Phil and I had these conversations about Dave Van Horn and the facilities and everything that goes into Arkansas baseball. Would you rather play for a minor league team and not necessarily get the best coaching in terms of what you get at Arkansas with Dave Van Horn. Well, now you could say the same thing about the Arkansas basketball program, at least with the future moving forward, is you have an NBA type coach that's head of your college basketball program. So the idea that he's not preparing you for the NBA is just it's not a lie, but it's untrue, because you have that guy clearly who's going to get you ready for the next level. But it's just a matter if you want to come back and not take the money. And money's just a big issue, Tommy. It's
hard to see it when you're one of these guys, 20, 21 years old, you know, 22 years old. It's hard to have this perspective that you got the rest of your life to make money. And now I know you got a short window to make two-comma income as a professional basketball player. But is one more year, the bet you're making is that you could make more money by waiting a year versus leaving now. You could put yourself in a better draft position. That's the only factors you're really boiling everything down to, right? Is can I make more money by staying another year?
Here's my argument with Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe when it pertains to money. Mason would be better off coming back next year because he is a fringe second round guy. He's on some mock boards, he's not on some.
And you may end up playing in somewhere as Stan if
correct
you don't get drafted.
Isaiah would be better, and this is just, again, just pertaining to money, just on the argument of money. Isaiah would be better off leaving because he's a projected first round guy in some mock drafts. He is going to be drafted. That is something that I think will hold true. I don't know if it'll be the first. I don't know if it'll be the second. But the money is a lot better in the first than it is in the second. So that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know how much he would rise next year based on the talent that they have coming in. Maybe he'll be even better with the guys surrounding him. Maybe he won't get as many touches. That's something you have to think about if you're Isaiah Joe and if you're Mason Jones. If these guys next year, if a couple games in, they're ready to go and they're playing like ballers, then you're not going to get as many touches next year. The argument is, or the team is not going to be as focused on you two individuals when it comes to the scoring output next year.
It's really no different than like a stock. I know everybody's got that out there that plays the stock market is worried this morning because it's getting ready to drop like a rock when it opens this morning. But it's really no different. Am I better off to sell this stock now? Stock ABC, whatever it is. In this case, you're talking Mason Jones, Isaiah Joe, and their pro career. Am I better off to sell the stock now, or if I hold it a year, will it go up in price? Kind of the same philosophy, right?
And it's just a matter of how you think it's going to go. And you bet, as a stockbroker or just someone who's holding out, you bet on the idea that it's going to get better, not worse.
Right. And that's what you got to think about if you're these two guys.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three. And nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
So Arkansas got a much-needed series win against South Alabama this weekend. And Heston's walk-off play, first walk-off homer. He's had a couple walk-off singles in his career, but the first time he's ever hit a walk-off homer in an Arkansas uniform, and that was, he just hit a bomb in yesterday's series clinching win.
Yeah, the wind's blowing in, and yeah, it was not easy to get one out to where he hit it, and it was a no-doubter. I mean, he crushed it, and that was against a good pitcher, and it's I'll say the key at bat was the one before him where Christian Franklin got on base. And the reason why it's key at bat is if Heston comes up with the bases empty, they probably walk him in that situation. And so Christian Franklin is really been hot just about all season. He's batting over 400, and so that the two of them are the dynamic duo for this baseball team, and they're the reason why this team has a chance to win some games at Mississippi State this coming weekend.
And Christian didn't have a great batting average his freshman year. Now, again, it's freshman, you temper your expectations, but for him to make this jump like he has, you got to give him credit for the work he put in the offseason, Clay.
Yeah, he made some dynamic changes to his swing. He had a big, loopy, long swing and had a lot of strikeouts, was not able to hit the slider, and had a lot of swing and misses. And they told him after the season in his exit meeting that he's going to have to change his swing, and they gave him some mechanics to work on, shorten the stroke, and it is compact and it is powerful. I mean, he did a lot of things in this first month of the season to tell you that he did exactly what their coaches gave him to do. And he's a big-time prospect now because of the way he plays defense and runs.
You think about the game one blowout, which Arkansas has, guys. I mean, for them to do what they did, if you're just sitting there like, what is going on? Are they going to end up losing this series? Now, they responded in game two, and then they ended up getting that win yesterday, but you had to be a little worried after what happened and transpired in game one.
Well, I mean, yesterday took a walk-off to win the game. Now, they were going to go to extra innings, but it was not an easy weekend. This was not a ho-hum, roll-up South Alabama type weekend. I think maybe this is the point that, you know, you got ebbs and flows to any season that's as long as baseball season is. There's going to be ups and downs, but maybe yesterday and that Kerstad shot was the boost of confidence they need to kind of get back on track going to Starkville this weekend, because if you don't play well there, Clay, you can get embarrassed real quickly.
Yeah, there are a lot of good things that happened the last two games of this series, including the bullpen work and what you saw from Elijah Trest and Zebulon Vermillion to shut down South Alabama in the last six innings when the game's basically on the line at any point. And those guys came in and were lights out, and they were throwing some gas, 95, 96, and pounding the zone for strikes, and that's the best thing. Kind of some notes from the weekend. You know, you saw Patrick Wicklander and Casey Copps, who you thought were going to be two of your top five pitchers, struggle on Friday. And Casey Copps is going to be a middle-of-the-week guy probably for a couple of weeks now until he gets his stuff going and can locate and throw strikes down in the zone. He's leaving a lot of his pitches up. Wicklander's got to develop to get his breaking balls going, his off-speed pitches, because they're sitting on his fastball right now. And he's not even locating his fastball. So he's got some work to do. Might see him get another, you know, weekend start, but he might be a midweek guy if he can't throw a little better than he did the last two outings. The outing against Texas and the outing on Friday, just not what you would call premium stuff.
What about Bolden, Clay? I think he had a pretty good performance this week.
Outstanding. Outstanding. He's locked himself in as a weekend guy, and I think he's only going to get better. I think his miles per hour is going to jump, but he's able to locate all of his pitches, four strikes, and put them in the proper, doesn't leave them in the middle of the plate. He can stay on the edges and hit them, and that's what you have to do in the SEC.
Another good guy that had a solid outing pitching-wise is Zebulon Vermillion. He matched his career outing in terms of the innings pitch. He struck out the last nine, not struck out, excuse me, he retired the last guys he faced, nine straight batters, and he got his first win of the season. Your bullpen, it showed up pretty strong on Sunday, Clay.
Yeah, McIntyre on Saturday was a guy that I think threw 15 out of 17 pitches for strikes, and I think you're going to start seeing him get a lot more action. So he's a freshman pitcher. He only throws it about 85, 87, but it's with movement, and it's Greg Maddox-like. I mean, it is movement on the edges, and you like that.
And I think with, like, just the overall makeup of the team right now, are you worried a little bit? You mentioned Copps not having. I thought he was a guy that was going to really be one of your crucial bullpens. I didn't know if he was going to be the closer or not, but you mentioned him earlier, Clay. Is he a guy you're worried about a little bit based on how he started the season?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like he's been hit hard. And, you know, he's a year removed from Tommy John surgery, a year and a half, I guess, and it's right now, he doesn't look like he's got it. Now, if you know, he goes to the bullpen and works on a few things. It might be mechanical. Maybe he still has a good year. But they were expecting him to pitch two times a week. And if you'd have asked me, what's the pitcher on the team that's going to get the most appearances? In other words, pitch a midweek game and then maybe pitch twice on the weekend. It would be Kevin Copps, and not going to happen the way he's pitching right now.
Going to be a big week. Arkansas basketball at Nashville. We're talking baseball. They're down at Starkville. Watch all the games at Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street. Anytime the Hogs are on, half-price apps and taps during the game. All the TVs around the restaurant will be on the game, and all the appetizers on the menu will be half-price as well. And all the beers on tap, half-price during every game. And that's all season long. Baseball, basketball, football. So no matter what you're watching. Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street, across from Harps.
So you get Grand Canyon tomorrow night and then Wednesday for a midweek game, and then you start conference play in Duty Noble against the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Clay, we'll talk about this. They lost a pitcher, didn't they, for a little bit? One of their better pitchers. Does that ring a bell? I feel like I saw that.
Mississippi State?
Yes.
I think Ginn for a little while. Yeah,
that's it.
JT Ginn.
Yeah, that's something to keep an eye on as well, that they won't be.
And what's Grand Canyon's nickname, Ty? Bring it to me right now.
I don't know. Got 5 seconds.
Lopes. They're the antelopes.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Guys, here is Sam Pittman, the video that the Razorback Football Twitter account put up on social media.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Man, how you doing, buddy? Yeah, it's going to be a great day to recruit. Wait, we didn't get it. I'm going to go hit somebody up for a hot dog. Man, it's nice out here.
Isn't it nice out here?
I've never been out here before. Yeah! Go home! Oh my God! Look at Oliver, he's staring. Oliver, movie star. I sure wish I'd get a hot dog.
Me too. I want a hot dog.
You guys like a hot dog? Anyway, I can have a hot dog? Yeah.
Absolutely. Put some mustard here.
Happy birthday. How old are you? 31 years old. Downhill slide, man. 10 and free. I like it.
How you doing, boss?
How you doing, buddy?
Is there a better feeling than if you're an Arkansas Razorback fan and Sam Pittman asked you if you can have one of your hot dogs? Can you feel, is there a level of
greatness? You just said $2, please.
Yeah.
You'd have tried to sell him a hot dog.
How can I make money off him and his wife being? He's like, yes, sir. That'll be $5.
The fear is he could eat all the hot dogs.
Yeah.
Because we asked him, guys, we asked him when he was on halftime a couple weeks ago. I asked him, hey, so, coach, what's your favorite restaurant? What's your favorite watering hole around Fayetteville? And he's like, I like them all. He was like, I'm a big guy, and I like them all.
We brought up Herman's because we know that's one of his favorite. And he threw in there, I like chocolate too.
I sat with him on Friday for an hour or so. And as I was leaving, Barry Odom pops in, and I thought they were, and it was a little past noon, and I thought, you know, like he was going into for some, you know, hey, how about we think about this stunt or this blitz or whatever, and I was like, this is some coaching stuff, and he goes, no, this is my personal trainer, Barry Odom, and I said, your trainer, and then Clorinda Carr started laughing and says, yeah, they go on a walk every day, lunch, and Coach Pittman, he says, you know, he was a 10-6 sprinter when he was at Missouri in the 100 meters. And he walks faster than any human being. He says, when he told me we were going to go on a walk at lunchtime, I thought, well, I need to do that. You know, I need to, you know, shed a few pounds and everything. He says, he's a speed walker. And he says, this is really tough on me. And there they went. And he just had his hand on him like, slow down, slow down, slow down. That's just going down the steps to get started, you know. But every day they go to lunch, and of course they're talking football and going over things. But it's like that's the dynamic duo right there, Sam Pittman and Barry Odom. I think Kendall Briles goes to the gym and he does a little faster pace workout. But this is a good staff, and I think they're having a lot of fun, and they're on the same page, and it's really going to be interesting. Sam told me that every player on the team is bigger, and they're bigger in the right spots from their off-season program, and he said he's excited at what they've done, and that the decisions have been made one by one on, you know, how to structure a workout, and said it's hit. It's, when I say it's hit, you know, it's been successful on that. It's been the right program for each player.
And so, is it just the nature of when you change head coaches, you generally change philosophies, right? I mean, you go from ground and pound to spread. You go from spread to what Pittman's going. It just seems like
they're
going to
be spread still. Well, they're still going to be spread.
But here's my point. Every time there's a change with a head coach, it just seems like there's such a drastic philosophy change in how you physically prepare the players in the offseason. The last staff wasn't really getting the job done in the weight room, so now we're going to get the job done. It just seems like we hear this every transition that there's been over the last 15 years.
Well, it's not just that. It's the last 100 years. It's, you know, when you see something that's not working, you try to fix it. And you know, you go a different direction. And sometimes it can be subtle. Sometimes it can be just, a coach's the way he handles the media, or the way he handles, the way he talks to fans, or how he does things. You go from Abe Lemons to Tom Penders, and went from Bob Weltlich to Abe Lemons. I'm talking about University of Texas basketball there, and that's way back there. But I think without question, you made a big change between, say, Eddie Sutton and Nolan Richardson. Then you made another big change from Nolan Richardson to Stan Heath. And the Stan Heath deal didn't work, right? You know, it's like we didn't rebound very well against Nolan with Nolan's teams and his philosophy. So we're going to go to the Big Ten philosophy that rebounds. Well, that didn't work. And it sure didn't work for Arkansas fans. They didn't like it. You know, it's like these 52-51 games have got to go away, and they got to go away quickly. That's the way Frank put it.
Nobody is getting it done the way the current staff's getting it done in the weight room. You know, the previous guys were just not doing
jacking
it right.
Around.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what they were doing.
So Clay, how was?
Well, they actually tried to lose weight. Yeah, the interview was fine. He's really good one on one, and you know that stuff will be online in a couple of days. I'm working on it today. It's a magazine piece, and it'll be a long piece. And some of the things that I just told y'all will be in it. Not a lot of specifics. Franks and Jefferson are cleared to practice. You know, the two quarterbacks that had off-season surgeries, and they both of them are doing well. He said they've had good leadership. He didn't name names. But it was just a lot of it I spent with Sam, just what's he going to do in practice? And he thinks he knows, but he said, I might get out there and be completely different. He says, I've never done it before. He says, I know I'm ready. I've studied under some good ones. And he says, I have a lot of ideas on how you should do the head coach deal. And he says, I think I understand it. But I haven't done it before. And that's the last box we have to check with Sam Pittman, right, Tommy? I mean,
yep.
That's what you and I have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
He's done everything. He knows everything. He's a good recruiter. He knows how to coach. He knows what he wants as far as toughness and attitude. He knows relationships, and those are all key areas. He did tell me, he said, there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more things that come across his desk than he thought did. So
the proximity to greatness doesn't always equal greatness, does it, Clay?
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Yep. I think what he feels really good about is that his evaluation of his staff, he thinks he's hired good people. and good coaches and people with the ability to do their jobs, and he's going to let them do their jobs.
So, Clay, one of the things that Eric Musselman did when arriving on campus at the University of Arkansas is connecting with former players, wearing the old Final Four gear, like celebrating. He really ingratiated and immersed himself within the Arkansas basketball program. And I think because of that, I think there's a lot more people that jumped on the train early and are currently on the must bus now compared to if he would have just kind of been not been active on social media, not saying praises to former players, the former regime that went on here, the Arkansas basketball program. And I'm wondering, the reason I played the Pittman theme off the break is because he seems like from his opening press conference where he's had sharing tears of emotion that he's crying about that, that he really wants to do kind of a similar thing, maybe not as concentrated in social media like Eric Musselman has, but he wants to be one of us, basically, in just how to word it. I know that he didn't go to school here, but he grew up a fan and stuff. Does that seem like that he's going about it in a different way, but the end result is the same, that he wants to appear as an Arkansan as much as Eric Musselman seems to have done the first couple months he's been on the job?
Yeah, I think you're probably right on that, Ty. And the clear difference is that he knows it and he's lived it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not he knows where he likes to go to eat. he knows where he likes to go to church. I mean, it's the things that there's a comfort zone for him in coming into this job that he's not going to get lost on campus. When he and Barry Odom go out for a walk and he's like, hey, coach, let's don't turn here. There's three hills up that way. I mean, he knows where the hills are. And, I mean, it's like he knows where the mountains are. But he knows where – and then by the same token, he knows where the hills are in the SEC. There's one in Tuscaloosa. There's one in Baton Rouge. There's one in Athens. One in Gainesville. So he gets it, and it's going to be an easier transition than, say, for Eric Musselman. And it's the tough part is that you can rebuild a roster with four or five basketball players, and you're up and running. Football, that's not how it works. You lose more players each year in football than you do in basketball. You might go a year where you don't lose any players in basketball, but it's almost every year you lose 15 to 20. And so it's hard to turn a roster over in football like you can in basketball in 1 or 2 years. So it's a hard job, and and he may have brought in the fans. I'm talking about Sam Pittman, but you're a two-game losing streak from people thinking, well, I don't know if he's going to be the guy or not.
Yeah.
And that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you wait middle of next year, and if they're not rolling and they're getting thumped and they're going to, like, yeah, I see the decisions he's making in, the last 5 minutes of the first half, and they're not making any adjustments at halftime. I don't know if this is going to work. That will happen. Just trust me. And it'll be from people that are completely happy right now that they think he's the answer. But it is they were so far back and have so far to go that it's going to be a tough transition. Now, I might be surprised. Maybe they go to South Bend and win. I don't think they will. What will be a good year next year? Will it be, five wins and they were competitive in three games and they didn't get blown out, but twice. Is that an improvement? Probably it is. Will it still cause some consternation for a certain group of fans? Probably it will. There'll be some saying, I thought it was they needed to hire that Kiffin boy. I thought they needed to hire that drink up at Missouri. It's not easy to keep the fan base totally running smooth. It's just not easy to do anymore.
So I was up in Fayetteville on Saturday night, Clay, and drive back Sunday morning. I passed the stadium, and I'm just sitting there driving by, and I probably should have been looking at what was ahead of me on the road, but I'm just staring at the stadium as I'm driving. I was like, I was just like, this team used
mesmerized.
Yeah, mesmerized, because a lot of my best memories are in that football stadium or watching what occurs in that football stadium. I'm thinking about the facilities. I'm thinking about what it was like back in the day when I was growing up with certain teams, with Houston Nutt and Bobby Petrino. And I just caught myself daydreaming a little bit about what this team was and what it could eventually be. It would be one thing if we were in Nashville talking about Vanderbilt football right now. It would be one thing if we were up in New Jersey doing Rutgers Sports Radio and talking about the Scarlet Knights. But this university, this football program has tradition. It has legacy. Now, this isn't the same team as it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, or even the 90s, but to say that, like, for the national guy that doesn't know about the history of Arkansas football, that only knows, like, what have you done for the Blaze, like, oh, they have no chance getting back or anything, I think that's aggravating to so many fans when you're not too far off from competing for not only the SEC championship, but for a national title in 2011, man.
Yeah, you're right, and it's a very complex situation, football. It is the ultimate team game. It's not one position. It's not two. It's you have to be good, probably about 40 deep, and to be competitive on the national level and be a factor where, okay, I can get to the college football playoff. I can be one of the top four teams. You got to have talent that deep in your roster, and it's not easy to do. And you have to be good at the one position that everybody talks about 24/7, and that's quarterback. It's that's the difference maker. So you can be good at some of those other positions, but not have enough. And if you don't have quarterback, well, then it can be a double whammy. You can't compete. You're not going to be able to score any points, and you're going to give up points. And all once it gets ugly real quick. But I know Arkansas can get back, and I know that if Eric Musselman can do it, if Dave Van Horn can do it, if Chris Bucknum and Lance Harder can both win the SEC championship in track in the same season, I know it can be done in Arkansas. Those aren't easy sports either. The SEC is just as tough in those sports. I see the things that are going on right now in the football program as far as foundation. I wasn't sure about what foundation was being laid in football under Chad Morse, but I know that it's solid under Sam Pittman right now.
Yeah,
just getting started. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just 8 weeks in, but I think he's going to recruit well. I think he's got a veteran staff that knows what they're doing.
Clay, you mentioned some of the other sports that are having success on the Hill. You can talk about the softball team. You can also talk about what Kobe Hale was doing with the Arkansas women's
Absolutely.
Soccer team. It goes back to kind of my Vanderbilt comparison. It would be different if so many sports in Fayetteville were not having success, but if you point to the other sports, whether it's the baseball team, track and field, women's soccer team, whatever, they're having success. And I know that you can't always correlate and compare when you go to different sports, but looking at the previous success that the football team has had at Arkansas and the success in the other sports, I'm wondering, is there going to be a time, and you'd have to, since you're more of the historian on this show, was there a time in Arkansas sports where the basketball team, the football team, and the baseball team were all competing at the highest level? Has that ever happened?
Yeah, I think you'd have to go back to 1979 when you had Holtz in football, Norm DeBrine, College World Series, where they almost won. And then basketball had been in the Final Four and in 78.
Because you went to the Orange Bowl in 78, you beat Oklahoma without your three guys. You won you went to the College World Series Championship in 79, and then you went to the Final Four in 78 and the Elite Eight in 72.
Finished third, won the third place game. Yeah, mm-hmm. that would be the time when they were all three rolling at the same time.
So it's been, that's, if we do the 80, that's been almost 40 years, or 40 years actually.
It seemed like it was last week to me.
Really? Can you remember, like the games I just mentioned, can you remember, like, those
specific
games?
Things?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I was not in Omaha, but I was in the Checker Dome. In fact, My brother was the SID at Arkansas, and I was at the Log Cabin Democrat and wanted to go cover because Marvin Delph's from Conway wanted to go cover. And he said, I can't get you a seat on press row, but I can get you a ticket in the stands. And it's the first game, so by and large, the Notre Dame fans aren't going to be in their seats. And so wear a green sweater and just come sit on the first row at the start of the game. And you'll be right behind the media. And when, it was towards the end of that first game, some of the Notre Dame fans came in and they're just talking to me like I'm a Notre Dame guy. And so I just kind of slid around in, different seats. And then I had a pass so I could get into the interview room. So that's how that went down, guys. It was a little bit surreal to be at a Final Four.
So you mentioned your brother being the SID and getting you tickets, Clay. I think, I know, Tommy, we have tickets here at the radio station, right. But the biggest misconception about sports media members is that we just have a plethora of tickets and we have all these connections. My buddies who text me for the randomest game, whether it's Notre Dame coming up this year, whether it's basketball games, I'm always texting, you got tickets.
If we have tickets, it's because we've bought them.
Correct.
I think that's the misconception is, and Clay gets this a lot too, they think that the university just hands us tickets. Here, you're in the media, here's a roll of tickets.
There's 10 tickets.
How many would you like? That's not how, it's never worked that way.
I wish it was. We need to change that, Clay.
Yep. We don't want to be in the ticket business, trust me.
No.
No, because once you have tickets, then everybody's going to know you always have tickets, and your life will be a living hell. Trust me.
And by the way, Clay's got 15 tickets lower level for the Notre Dame game.
Correct.
I'll give you his phone number coming up in the next segment if you'd like to go to the Arkansas-Notre Dame game next year.
I have a jet, and I've got four seats, right. And y'all just come on.
Yeah. Clay's got everything you need.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.